In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So would you please do me a favor? Can you go to podsurvey.com/Jamie? That's J-A-M-I-E, podsurvey.com/Jamie, and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. You guys, you can buy a lot of great things on Amazon for $100. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/Jamie, J-A-M-I-E. Guys, thanks for your help. Go to podsurvey.com/Jamie. Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between.
Hey, friends, I'm Nikki Ogden, team member of the Happy Hour podcast. Due to an unexpected crisis, Jamie is going to be delaying her book publicity and tour. She's also going to take a break from social media, public appearances, and recording new shows at this time. We want to give her space to process, discern, and recover. We are so incredibly thankful for the community that Jamie has built here at the Happy Hour, and we know that you want to share your love and support for her. The best way that you can do that is by listening to this pre-recorded show and sharing this episode with a friend. We're so thankful for you.
Hey, friends, welcome back to the Happy Hour. Today on the show, Michael Panther joins me and shares his story. He had a book come out last September where he wrote about it, and I knew that I wanted to have a conversation with him because he talks about hope in the midst of hard times. And if there is something that we all need, it is hope in the midst of hard times. You may not share the same story as Michael's, but I know that we all share the story of being in need of God, being in need of him to show up, being in need of him to help us. Michael grew up in Sudan and a war-torn country at the time. His family moved around a whole lot. And at the age of 10, he found himself having difficulty walking. And so he tells the story of how him and his father ended up in Kenya, how he ended up with a family that was a medical doctor, how he ended up in the U.S. and he ends up going to LSU. Go Tigers. You're going to love his story of just resilience and just hope. He talks about how his hope became real in the hospital. And you gotta tune in to listen to that. If you want to hear more from Michael or read more of his story, go check out his book. It's called Living with Hope, A True Story of Faith, Purpose, and Mobility. And he now has a whole organization to help mobility get to Africa. Having a disability in Africa is not the same as having a disability in America. And Michael is fully aware of that. And he wants to help everyone that he can who needs mobility to be able to have it. And so he has an organization that sends wheelchairs to Africa. He's going to tell us all about it. You guys, you're going to like this episode. Sit back, relax, listen to Michael Panther tell his story of hope and mobility. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the Happy Hour.
Thank you, Jimmy. It's so good to be with you.
I am really happy to have you. We were discussing before we started recording that you are in freezing Chicago and I am in warm Austin, and it is January, and we have two completely different climates right now. So it's interesting that, and I'm glad that you're here, and I kind of wish I could send some sunshine and warmth up to Chicago for you.
Absolutely. I'm really jealous right now. I wish I could get some of those warm weather there.
Well,
but, God is good. That's how, you know, our world is. You know, there's different side of the world that is cold now, and there's some side of the world that is warm. So we just thank God for all the seasons.
Thank God for all the seasons. That kind of brings me into having you on the show today and just thanking God for all parts of our life. You have a book that came out last September called Living with Hope, A True Story of Faith, Purpose, and Mobility. And I would love for us to hear your story today. And God has done miraculous work in your life, like he has in so many of our listeners and in my life. And God is just a God who does miracles and works beautifully in all of our lives individually. And today I want to talk about how he has worked in your life and how it's led you to your purpose and what you do now with your life. So if you could introduce yourself, tell us like where you do, what you do, all the things. And then I'm going to go all the way back to your childhood.
All right. Thank you, Jamie. I'm just happy to be here. My name is Michael Panther, and I'm the founder of a ministry called Living with Hope, Hope Mobility International. And the ministry main focus is to share the hope of Jesus Christ through the gift of mobility in Africa. And so that's what I do now. And I enjoy doing it. And yeah, it's a great purpose that God has given me.
Well, I'm excited about that. I want to bring this up real quick. You may tell me later, but I did see that you graduated from Louisiana State University, LSU.
Yes.
And I have a son who's a senior who has applied at LSU, and we might go visit it soon. And so I might be heading over to your alma mater to check it out.
That would be wonderful. You know, LSU is a wonderful school. So your son should easily consider that option. He doesn't need to visit any other universities.
You sound like a true tiger.
Yeah, that's it. It's true tiger, purple and gold all the way.
So, there you go.
Hope you guys go there and enjoy, and you will feel at home. It's a great place to be.
I love that so much. Well, Michael, yeah. You start out your book, and I would like to start here with your story. Is you grew up in South Sudan, and South Sudan, for your entire childhood, was war-torn. Just lots of war and poverty and really lack of stability and safety. And so can you take us back to your childhood living in South Sudan? And if you want to, you can go all how you ended up in Kenya as well.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I was born in South Sudan, and that time it was actually the Sudan. So they were all together. It was not separated then. And yeah, and it was in the middle of the war. The war has gone for decades, and I was born in that war. And so actually, as a young boy, I never knew what the word peace meant. We never experienced peace. I thought maybe the whole world was just in that situation where we're just running around for our life, looking for protection and all those things. So that was my early childhood. We were running around, you know, so because the country was just embroiled in that very war, intense situation between the northern part, which is dominant Muslim, and the southern part, that is Christian. And, you know, most of the time, the reason for wars are always very conflict. They're complex. They evolve over time, but in that time there was struggle of power, economic resources, and also the southern part where I'm from. We want to have freedom, freedom to worship God because we are Christian. But the northern part didn't want us to do that. They want us to be a Muslim. Otherwise, we are second citizen. We are not citizen if we are not Muslim. And so that was what was going on at that time. And so as a young boy, we experienced a lot of unrest. You know, the Civil War really affect a lot of civilian a lot, you know. Not just like the army will go and fight there, but civilians are the ones that really affected. And so my community, my family were affected a lot. And in the midst of those, I lost two of my younger brothers at that time. And really, they did not deserve to die. And so most of the time when I think about it, it really brings sad memories because these young boys, they didn't deserve that kind of situation to die. And myself and my family too, we didn't deserve that suffering. And so, but that's what the situation was at that time. There was nothing we could do about it. We found ourselves in that war, you know. And so as I started to grow up, you know, I was normal, just a young boy could run around and could run a marathon in few hours. But then all of a sudden I got sick and we didn't know what was wrong with me. There were no medical facilities in the country. And so we don't know what can be done to me.
Can I stop you for just a second, Michael, and ask you a question?
Yes. Yes.
At this point in your life, you guys had done a lot of commuting around. And so, yes. Because you had to, because of the war, because of the threats. And so, when I was reading parts of your book, I was wondering, as you were a young child growing up, did you ever feel like you had a home, like you had a place that you said, this is my home, this is where I am?
No. We never had a home. We never had a place that we call home. Mm. We were moving around, running around every month, every day, you know. I think a place that we can call home is when we are staying in one place, maybe for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the longest. But all the time we were running around, running for our life. And so yeah, we were displaced in our own country.
Right. So when you became sick and you still were saying there's no medical doctors, what was happening? Were you were 10 years old, I think. And what did it look like was your future? What could your family have done for you?
Well, at that time, we didn't know what could be done. But my parents, especially my mom, told me and my dad that you need to go to a neighboring country, Kenya, and to get treatment. But, you know, during the war, leaving my mom, and I had that time 3 other siblings, leaving them behind was something that I didn't want to hear.
Mm.
So I told my mom and my dad, no, we are not leaving, because I don't want you, my dad, to leave, because he will be there for you and my younger siblings. So I'm just going to be here until I die. You know, I don't want us to go. We didn't even know where we are going. The journey was going to be long. And we don't know if we're going to make it. So if we don't make it, and then my parents, my mom and my sibling don't make it, then I have just, taken the life of my whole family. And I didn't want to do that.
So you really felt like you going to get help in Kenya was putting your entire family at risk, because your dad was leaving your mom and siblings vulnerable because they didn't have the dad there. If something were to happen to you and your dad, they would be completely vulnerable. And so that was a lot of pressure, but your parents were insistent on you going.
Yes. That was really, I really just didn't want to take that risk. But my mom, that's her love for me, was something that I still, even this day, I don't understand.
Mm.
She loved me so much that she wanted to take that risk. And he told me, Michael, God will take care of us. You need to go to Kenya with dad. And so we decided to take on a journey.
And you were how old?
Still in that age,
okay,
probably closer to 11 at that time now. And I could not walk at that time because the disease that I have affected my mobility. So I was not able to move. And so my dad has to carry me in his bag. And the journey, we didn't know exactly where we are. There's no road that we can follow. We're just using the sun as our GPS to direct us. We walking through the jungle, the flat, tall grass, everything. That sometimes we just sleep on top of the tree, wild animal going all around us. But God was there with us. He was protecting us.
Mm.
And we made it to not a refugee camp, but a humanitarian center where we found some people that were helping us to go to Kenya. And so we finally got into a small plane, and that plane took us to Kenya, where we were able to go to a refugee camp.
Thank you. If you don't know it, guys, I'm a Texas girl through and through. I've lived here most of my life. I was born here, and I love traveling. Here's why I love traveling throughout Texas, because it has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities, which means there's an infinite number of different travel experiences. And no two travelers are exactly alike, and it means that no two trips should be either. If you're a beach person, well, you can have fun under the sun with Texas's 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies cannot get enough of Texas's world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Guys, come visit my state. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. So you and your dad walk for a couple months.
Yes.
A couple months through all kinds of brush and the heat and the animals and the flood and tall grass. And your dad is carrying you, and you just know you got to get to Kenya. And you get to Kenya and you find a humanitarian organization.
Yes.
And was your request, we need help for my son? Or was your request, my whole family back in Sudan is struggling and we need help? What was you guys' main focus as you were heading to Kenya?
Well, I think the main focus was for me to get help, to be healed, to be able to walk and go back to South Sudan and, and enjoy my family. So that was the main thing because, you know, I was the oldest son of my parents, and they really wanted to see me surviving and succeed in life and all those things. So that was our main goal. And so when we came to the refugee camp, we, you know, I was taken to one of the clinics there so that they could look at me. But even that, you know, we thought we made it, you know, but the refugee camp didn't have the right medical facilities as well. And so it was like, oh, we made it all this way for nothing, you know. And I'm not going to make it now because there's nothing we can do, you know. And then, of course, way back there, my family, my parent, my mom, and my sibling don't know about us. There were no cell phone to like talk and to know how we are doing and how they are doing. So we are just living in this, you know, worrisome. We just worry all the time about what's happening with them. And of course, I do believe that was the same thing for my mom and my siblings as well. They were worried about what have happened to me, you know?
Yeah. So you get to the refugee camp in Kenya and they don't have the correct medical facilities for you. You still need help because you have no idea what's happening and why you can't walk and you get some help. So you get on a plane and they take you where, and when do you meet a doctor who can help you?
Yes. So, yeah. So we made it to this camp, refugee camp called Kakuma. That's the northern part of Kenya. And we waited there for a while now, looking, just seeing if there's anything that will happen. At some point, I think I felt hopeless. You know, I was not even hoping for anything anymore. I just waiting there to die, you know. So, but then one day, I heard that there were mission doctors coming to that area, and they're gonna look at me and see if they can help me. So I just came there. You know, I was not expecting much because we have seen enough so far and nothing that has helped me. Mm-hmm. And so these doctors came and they looked at me and they said that we need to bring you to our hospital just outside Nairobi, Kenya. This hospital was a mission hospital run by missionary doctors. And those doctors are from the U.S. They went to Kenya and then they saw these kids that have treatable diseases like, you know, like clubfoot, some of medical deformity that could be treated. And so they started a hospital there, and they just kept going around the country looking for kids that needed to be treated, and they bring them to their hospital and they treated them for free. And so they saw me and they say, yeah, we need to bring you to a hospital. But the issue is that they have a long waiting list. And so at that time when they saw me, I had to wait for 6 months.
Okay.
To make it to the hospital for my turn. And, you know, the disease continued to make a lot of damage to my body. So I finally made it there to the hospital. And it has already been 2 years from the time that I got sick to the time that I made it to the hospital. They diagnosed me that I had a tuberculosis of spine, TB of spine. And the TB of spine that could be treated with antibiotics if you are diagnosed right away. But because of lack of medical facilities, it has done so much damage to my body. But they were there to try to save my life.
In those 2 years, was your father still with you or did he go back to where your mother was?
Yes, my dad was still with me. He couldn't leave me alone. He wanted to bring me back home completely healed. You know, that was his mission.
Yeah.
And so he was not giving up on me and was there with me throughout.
So the hospital diagnoses you, which has done a lot of damage to your spine. At this point, you can't walk. What happens next? Because I know that from, you know, 11 to 18, a lot happens in your life. What happens next after you get the diagnosis?
Yeah, so they had to correct, like, my spine. They did not spine surgery. I went through a lot of complication. The doctors didn't know that I was going to survive. They thought that I was going to die. I spent a lot of months in ICU. I remember 3 months in ICU.
Wow.
Just breathing through the machines and all those things. But for some reason, I got up. I started feeling better. And really, you know, that was God doing his miracle in my life. So I started to recover, but my mobility never came back. So I was not able to walk. So I was now confined in a wheelchair. And then it came into like, okay, what will happen to me if I go back to the refugee camp or to South Sudan in a wheelchair? What would my life be? If I go back to Sudan, I'm not going to survive there because people are running for their lives. Then I would be left alone, you know? So one day, the doctor that took care of me, his wife, I call her Mama Gianna, normal come to the hospital and pray with the patient. And so he came one day and prayed with me. And while she was praying with me, she heard a voice from God that said that, Gianna, you need to take care of Michael. And he's like, no, God, I have 4 kids. We left everything behind in the U.S. to come here with our kids and to serve you. We don't want to bring another kid to our life. But he continued to hear that voice, like, no, you need to take care of Michael. And he was just telling me that story, saying that while I was talking with her, she couldn't even hear what I was saying. She was just hearing,
that so loud.
And she was hearing so clearly. And so she left. She didn't say anything to me at that time. And then went home and talked with Dr. Mead, her husband. And you just tell them that I was at the hospital today and I heard this voice and it was clear. I never heard a clear voice like that, that we need to take care of Michael. And so Dr. Mead said, if God has spoken to you, then there's nothing we can do.
Mm.
We need to go and take care of Michael. So the following morning, they came to the hospital and told me the news that they need to, that God has told them to take care of me.
Okay, so Michael, let's stop. This is massive, okay? So you're in the hospital. You have been through so much tragedy and trauma, and now you are confined to a wheelchair. You sound like you still have hope. I'm sure there was time that it struggled, and so we can talk about that. And then yes. The doctor's wife comes in and hears God say, you need to take care of Michael. What does that actually mean? Like, your dad is here. He's left his family. You guys have left your family in South Sudan. The doctors are saving your life. And then this American woman hears from God. What does that mean for you? Like, what does it mean for them? What does it mean for you? You're 11, 12, 13 years old. What does that even mean? I need to take care of Michael.
Yes. You know, taking care is wanted. They wanted to bring me to be part of their family and to let me go to school. And so those are some of the things that I haven't heard.
Where they lived in Kenya or back in the U.S.?
They live in Kenya.
Okay, perfect.
They moved to Kenya with their kids, with their four kids. And so they raised their kid there while doing mission work, serving so thousands of kids' lives. And so when they told me that news, I remember I almost jumped out of my wheelchair because I couldn't believe it. It's like, why me? Because they have, you know, so many kids in the hospital that have come through. They have treated them and they have let them go.
And then you were different.
And then I am the only one that they picked to take care of me. I was just trying to put my head around that. I really still couldn't believe to this day, why did they choose me? They could have chosen any other kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, but they just told me that God has spoke to them and they just wanted to take care of me because of that.
You know, I can see, even as you're just telling your story here and how you document it in your book, is that there are so many moments in your life where you can look back and you can say, like, it could have gone this way. And we know that it would have ended in destruction. And yet God intervened and it ended in, I want to use the word triumph, but you know what I mean? Like, it ended in goodness. And even you getting the opportunity to go to school, and it would have been detrimental for you to have to go back to South Sudan in a wheelchair. I mean, you wouldn't have survived. And so it was like, God was saying, I'm going to take care of you. So you go back with this family, and you start living life with them in Kenya. And then did your father go back to your family in South Sudan?
Yes. So my dad was able to go back. He was able to sign some documents, say, okay, I'm leaving Michael with you as you guys are the guardians for Michael. And then I will be able to go back and trying to locate where my rest of the family are right now in South Sudan. So my dad was able to head back, and then the Meads looked for school for me. And I was able to go to school for the first time when I was, you know, close to 15 years old. I never had any formal school before that. And I had a lot of catch up to do. But I was really so excited because this was an opportunity of a lifetime for me. Because I never even thought about going to school, you know.
Yeah.
So this was just a wonderful, so I was excited to be able to go to school.
Michael, you mentioned that, you know, when the war in Sudan started, a lot of it was over probably multiple things. But one of the things you mentioned was religion, with the North Muslim and the South Christian.
Yes.
And so your family was a family of faith. You guys were Christians.
Yes.
Can you talk to me a little bit about those years of you not only just growing up and having to run for your life so often, but then from 10, you know, to 15 of being displaced and also being confined to a wheelchair? How did your faith in God, how did it sustain you? And what did it look like? What did discouragement look like for you? Because I would imagine you had seasons of discouragement. So how did you battle the discouragement, and how did your faith sustain you in those times?
Yes. So as a young boy, you know, still, we never had something like a church because we were moving around. Mm-hmm. So we never had a church that we would go to every day. But I remember when we run around every Sunday, we will gather under a big tree and worship God. And so as a young boy, you know, I just felt like, oh, this is where people just get together and stuff. So I didn't quite understand. But as I started getting a little older, I began to pay attention to the Word of God. And I remember a particular Sunday under the tree as we gathered, one of the elders up in his maybe torn apart Bible, in our language, lower language is called Dinka, and he read from John 3:16, that for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believe in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And I was deeply just moved by the idea of God's love. At our village, parents were very hesitant to send their kids to go and fight for the country because they don't want them to die. But here is God sending his one and only Son, sacrificing his Son for the love of us. Mm. That idea really moved me. Mm-hmm. And I gave my whole life to Christ at that moment because I knew that God loved us. Mm. And even though we are going through this suffering, he's there for us. And even though we're not going to make it because of war, I know where I'm going to go. Mm. I'm going to go to heaven. Mm. And I'm going to have an everlasting life. And so that's that moment. That's where it all started. My faith started. Mm. And then, of course, there will be a lot of challenge on my faith through, you know, during the war there, I've seen God too, you know, rescue us, you know, mm-hmm. During the terror, during the starvation, when we didn't know we were going to survive, during the death and attack on our community, I saw God was there for us. And he protected us, me and my dad, in the journey to come to Kenya. And of course, he provided the medical doctors, who saw me in the camp to bring me to the hospital. So I could see this big moment that God was there. But of course, the suffering that I went through was unbearable for me. I could not take it. And I still kind of, having this moment like, is that God, you know? Mm. I started kind of struggling a lot with God, you know, because I started to lose hope. Like, why can't you just heal me, God? Why are you letting me go through this unbearable pain and suffering? And, you know, what have I done to deserve this pain? You know, do you love me, God? Why? You know, so my faith was really getting hit a lot. Like I see this doubt in God, you know. But then when I'm like rock bottom, like I'm completely hopeless, God come up again, you know, like at the hospital when I was in ICU for many months. He did a miracle. Even the doctor say, Michael, we never seen such thing in our life here. Mm. And this is a miracle. And then my faith started getting strong again. So, okay, there's God. And God is there with me. And so I would say that in the hospital, during my 2 years stay at Cure Hospital, as I was wrestling with the Lord, is really where I embrace my true identity in him. And learn the true definition of a Christian hope. That's where I found hope. And that hope has sustained me to this day.
That's where you found hope that sustained you to this day. I love it so much. So you end up heading with the family in Kenya, and you get to go to school for the first time. And I love that you said you had a lot of catching up to do. And it would be a lot at 15, you know, show them to school for the first time. I eventually know you end up in America. So tell me how that journey went for you.
Okay. So after I went to school in Kenya there, at first, you know, I was older, so I didn't want to start in first grade. It's like, I'm too old for first grade. Can I start somewhere and then maybe see if I can make it? And so I ended up starting in seventh grade. Wow. And I told the teacher there, said, give me a chance. And if I fail, I'm going to repeat until I go to the next class. And so they allowed me. And by the grace of God, and he gave me knowledge to pass on the first year. So I went
good.
Ahead. And then went to high school and then finished high school in Kenya. And then my American family brought me my junior year of high school in Kenya to come and kind of see what the U.S. looked like, because I heard a lot about America, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they say, okay, we're going to bring you here to kind of have an idea what it looked like before you actually come to go to school. So they are original from Michigan. And so we went to Michigan in the summer. We visited some colleges there. And I remember just hearing people talking how beautiful the weather it is, you know, in the summer.
In the summer.
In the morning, we'll say, oh, what a beautiful day. In Kenya, nobody talk about weather, you know, the same. Every day, you know,
yeah.
So we just wake up and we enjoy life. Nobody's mentioned
it. Never changes. Same thing every day.
Yeah. Nobody talk about weather at all. But then I was kind of wondering, and then I asked them, why do people talk about weather every day? You know, it's like, what is about that? Can you explain to me? And so they pull out some pictures and whatever video or whatever of the snow and winter and how cold it is. And I was like, oh no,
yep.
I don't know whether I will survive here, you know?
Right. So, people in Michigan live there for the summers, they say. The summers in Michigan is what people love.
Yes, it's beautiful. Yeah. And now I could appreciate, now I could say, oh, this is beautiful weather. So I say, I need to go somewhere nice and warm. And so they say, oh, we have a friend that lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he was just visiting around that time when I was there. So he told me, hey, if you don't like snow, maybe you could come to Baton Rouge, because I live about 10 minutes from the campus, and I will be there because my parents, American parents, were still missionaries at that time. So they were going to go back.
They were going to go back. Okay.
Yeah. So it would be easy for you and for us to be able to keep an eye on you, you know. So I said, well, if there's no snow, I'm going to go there. So I went back to to Kenya, finished my senior year, and I applied to LSU, and I got accepted. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go there. So I showed up in the fall of 2012, going straight. I never visited the school before. I'm just coming straight to go and start my classes. And so that's how I came to the U.S.
I love it. I love it so much. Well, you know, you founded an organization, and you really want to help bring mobility to Africa, as you said. And so can you tell me about that, the journey to founding this organization, and then the good work that you guys are doing, and just brag on yourself for a minute, Michael. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so maybe I'll brag about God and how.
There you go. That's fine. That's fine. Yes.
Through my life, you know, after I was at LSU, and just being here in the U.S., I saw how people with disability are embraced, are loved, and cared for, and it just kind of touched me, because in Africa, people with disability are viewed as people with no value in the society.
Mm.
They're viewed as a curse. And, you know, nobody really want to come close to them most of the time.
Mm.
And so I was like, okay, maybe one day God is gonna maybe let me go back and serve people with disability. So let's see how that goes, you know. But I was studying economics, so I was like, I don't know how this is gonna work out, you know. Mm-hmm. I want to be, you know, gonna do economics, and then I'm gonna go and be one of the biggest economists, you know, work in Wall Street or mm-hmm. go whatever I could, you know. So that was my other dream, you know. But then I just had this passion in out of my heart that say, hey, you know, maybe God serve you for this, you know, to be able to go back to and serve people with disability. And so I just kind of pray to God and say, okay, God, if you want to use my life for this, I am here, you know. Mm. So I just continued to finish school while trying to see some opportunities on how to work with people with disability. And finally, I finished school and I moved to Chicago to work for a businessman here. And then right there, I started forming a ministry called Living with Hope. Mm-hmm. And the mission of that ministry is to share the hope of Jesus Christ through the gift of mobility. Mm-hmm. What we do, we take wheelchairs and other mobility devices, and then we send them to Africa. We started first in Kenya, mm-hmm. and then we take a team of therapists and mechanics, and we go out in the community and serve people with disability. We feed them with wheelchairs because over there, mobility is something mm-hmm. that is never heard of, you know. Mm. There's so many people that are crawling on the ground, mm-hmm. people that are laying on the floor because they don't have mobility. Mm-hmm. I was so lucky then with my American family. When they have somebody coming from the U.S., they will arrange for them to bring a mobility for me, a wheelchair for me. Mm. But a lot of other people with disability didn't have that chance. Mm-hmm. So they lay on the floor or they crawl on the ground. Yeah. And so that's where it's all started. And when we went on our first trip in 2018, we brought a container of 200 wheelchairs. And I remember over 1,000 people showed up for mobility. And so the need was just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then I say, okay, I needed to do more. So when I came back, I quit my job. And then I wanted to build a ministry so that we will be able to serve more people. Mm. That was in 2019. I just quit my job right in 2019. And then COVID hit. And I thought, oof, I made a wrong decision here. God was so good. He was faithful, mm-hmm. and he provided, and we were able to do more, and we have continued to grow. And right now we send about 10 to 12 containers a year to Africa, and each container has 200 to 240 wheelchairs in it. So it's just been beautiful to see how God has opened that door to be able to bring mobility to those who are in need.
It's so amazing, Michael. God has just really sustained and opened up doors for you. And the way that you're the way that you're helping thousands of people who don't have mobility, and it all comes from God, like just kind of providing along the way for you and your dad to get to Kenya, to be in the hospital, to meet the doctor, to have his wife come. I mean, you just see God's hands all over it. It's really, really beautiful. Can you tell us today how your family in Sudan is doing?
My family in Sudan are doing great. So on my first trip in 2018, being able to go back to Kenya, I was able to connect with my mom after 14 years.
Wow.
And I remember me just crying, you know, tears of joy. We have missed each other for so many years. And I know that it is because of their faith that's really helped me to survive this day.
Yeah.
And it was just a special moment. And of course, my siblings, I had one that I never seen before, and it was just a beautiful, joyful reunion for all of us.
I love that so much. Well, Michael, how can people find your ministry and be a part of it if they want to support you guys?
Yes, they could go to livingwithhope.net. They could be able to look a little bit about what we do. So many ways that you can support. First, you can support with your prayers. Mm-hmm. Pray that God will continue to open doors for us to serve more people with disabilities in Africa. You could come with us. You know, you want to come and serve, you could come and join us. Mm-hmm. You could support by financially donating online. So those are some of the ways that you can be a part of that.
That's really great. And you guys, as always, we'll put all of those links in the show notes. So if you're like driving or working out or doing dishes and you can't remember, we'll put the links for you. Michael, I really appreciate you coming on the Happy Hour and sharing your story. And if you guys want to read more about his story, go check out his book, Living with Hope, A True Story of Faith, Purpose, and Mobility. It's out everywhere you buy books. And so you could grab this book right here. So Michael, thanks for coming on the Happy Hour.
Thank you, Jeremy. I'm so happy to be here, and I hope your listeners enjoy this time.
The Happy Hour is produced and hosted by myself, Jamie Ivey, with assistance from Nikki Ogden and Ashley Caldwell, and the show is edited by Jason Talley.